Today's podcast is brought to you by Every Wednesday, a plan to inspire the people of Portland and support the place we call home. Let's get out of the house and spend some time with each other. Skip Zoom, meet for coffee, take your colleagues out to happy hour. Buying a gift? Ditch the internet and support a local maker by shopping in-store. Head into town every Wednesday and see what's going on at everywednesdaypdx.com.
Welcome to the Dive Podcast, presented by Willamette Week, where every Saturday we discuss the biggest news stories of the week with Portland's noisiest newsmakers, savviest culturistas, and some of the best journalists in the game. I'm your host, Brianna Wheeler, and I want to hear from you. So send your questions and comments to me, bwheeler@wweek.com. All right, y'all, enjoy the show.
On this week's cover, we are encouraging you to freak yourself out with the annual Fall Arts Guide. And it's got a particular focus on heebie-jeebies. Yes, because, well, fall, of course, but also because it is a bit of a horror-palooza for the Oregon arts this year. Last spring, the Oregon Shakespeare Festival's director, Nataki Garrett, resigned due to terrifying racial harassment. Then the festival announced a $2.5 million fundraising campaign to save the 2023-2024 season altogether. Artists' Repertory Theater straight up suspended its new season, pending further examination of its financial situation, and a predicted winter COVID variant. It may very well affect all manner of productions. So yeah. Levels of boogity. But artists make art, even when life is so on purpose hard for no reason. Artists are always going to art. So, yeah, let's get spooky with it. It's Saturday, September 9th, and this is episode 140 of The Dive. This week's Fall Arts Guide features previews of a feminist revenge fantasy production of Dracula, a film about the murderous pig lady from Jackson County, a rock opera billed as a phantasmagorical, psychosexual, science fiction musical masterpiece. And of course, because if you're about that life, you're about that life, a haunted house hunting guide. Today, I'm chatting with Portland Center Stage artistic director Marissa Wolf, whose production of playwright Kate Hamill's Dracula, a feminist revenge fantasy, really premieres in November. But first, here's what I learned from this week's edition of Willamette Week. Lucas Manfield wrote the fascinating story of a prolific career criminal, Jason Sheriff, LOL, whose wild car chases through residential neighborhoods led to a cop quitting his job after being told not to catch him. Sophie Peel reports the state agency, Bully, once led by Congresswoman Val Hoyle, tried to create an apprenticeship with LaMota, and newly obtained records show that staff were aware that this apprenticeship program was not legally viable, but they pushed forward anyways. And on the black pages, I mean back pages, I am also riding a fall arts wave with a preview of Black Artists of Oregon at the Portland Art Museum, and I also catch up with Oracle Wellness founder Megan D about her new product, Green Out, a tincture that can erase a high that gets too intense. All right, now let's chat with Portland Center Stage artistic director Marissa Wolf about her upcoming production, Dracula, a feminist revenge fantasy. Really?
Lens is pretty stunning, actually. The first time I read this play, I was on the edge of my seat because she manages to have it live in really, as our amazing literary manager Camila Bush says, a spooky ooky kind of place. Like, it's really like, oh my God, what's gonna happen at the end of every scene? Like a chills down your back kind of feeling. And she also sort of with that, then she threads in humor very dexterously, which I'm always interested in humor as a vehicle for getting at deeper things. Mm-hmm. And then ultimately, she's offering a lens that is deeply feminist and really kind of, I would say, an indictment of patriarchy. Mm-hmm. And so her sort of a feminist revenge fantasy, really, the feminist revenge part is this idea that vampires are patriarchy and the misogyny that comes with that over centuries, and that's what lives on and is passed down. Mm-hmm. From person to person to person. This idea that we can't identify vampires because they live among us. That feels like it's hard to see oppressive systems when we are just swimming inside them.
Correct, yes.
You know? So I think that the conversation Hamill is choosing to have inside of this framework of Dracula is so smart. And it's also playful and I would say delicious. it's got all the things.
That's dark.
Yeah.
Forgive me, but is it giving a little bit of a Barbie energy in that it's a vehicle for shining a light on an oppressive system using this very familiar, this thing that everyone's familiar with?
I think that's a great comparison. Listen, if you want to compare anything that I'm related to with that Barbie movie, I'll take it because I fucking love that movie. And I was completely dumbfounded. I couldn't believe that Greta Gerwig was able to get away with naming all that she named inside that movie. So I do think that what I'll say is, like, if you like Barbie, you'll like the Dracula, because I feel like, yes, the similarity perhaps dwells in the idea that this is a well-known property. It's mm-hmm. Over 130 years old. It's been adapted in all kinds of different ways. Certainly there's been multiple different stage adaptations over the years. But what Kate Hamill, this will be my third project that I've directed of hers, and they've all been adaptations. And she always, I think that what she does well is when she chooses to adapt something, she asks herself the question of, like, why this text now? Like, mm-hmm. what do I want to say about this text now? Or what does it mean to us now? And I think you feel that inside of Dracula, because it's all the things that, like, I want when I go to theater, which is, like, truly exciting, fast-paced, like, very theatrical, and, like, and filled with, moments of humor, but also really kind of punches you in the gut in a useful way.
Mm-hmm. So we're still going to hit all of the beats of Dracula, right?
I noticed I was rereading my script the other day, and she has a little subtitle. She says, loosely inspired by, based loosely on the novel by Bram Stoker on her script, based loosely on the novel. I think it's smart of her to say that. so that this is, like, get it right out there.
Yeah.
And part of that, and I'm just rereading the novel right now, which is, oh my God, it's scary. A lot of it is that obviously she condenses it way down, but all of her central plot points are Bram Stoker's central plot points. But one of the central things she does is make Renfield, who is a patient at the asylum, a woman, and also Van Helsing, the vampire slayer, a woman. And those two elements become very important to how the play moves and sort of what the play means. Because I think when you've got a traditional version of Dracula, that's really close to Stoker's world, is gonna feel like, it's dudes being dudes. It's like filled, I think, this is my bias, it's like filled with machismo, and the dudes save the day and save, like, the damsel in distress. And what Hamill insists on, and she's always doing this in her work, is that the people with the most agency at the center of the storytelling are women.
Mm-hmm. How does that energy change the experience from your perspective? Like, what's it like to direct these empowered female characters? Yeah. It's better, isn't it? Is it better?
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I always want to work with, I love working with all artists, and I love having as many women and non-binary folks in the room on any project. And yeah, the balance of all of the different demographics in the room always shapes the feeling and the tone of the room, for sure. One thing I know about Kate Hemmel's work is that she is very, what I love artists who are really thoughtfully always political and socially conscious in the construction of the world. So for example, I think all of her work, she's very aware of making sure that there's equal number or more female characters or tracks for actors than there are male. And that's important to her. And that it literally has to do with like coming up or sort of coming out of, you know, a canon of work from the US and from the UK that is male dominant. And like literally like contracts going to mostly men, right? And so that there's actually just a really simple way of operating of saying like, I wanna make sure that that the contracts are also going to women. But yes, I think also one of the things that's interesting in terms of gender in the world is that she definitely, maybe similarly to Barbie, once we go into the patriarchy land of horses, is that Hamill is fully acknowledging and naming the system at play and in which the two of the central women, Mina and Lucy, are feeling their own limitations within. And I love that Kate allows them to, I was just, you know, just rereading, for example, Bram Stoker writes, you know, it's like one or two sentences where Mina writes to her friend Lucy and she says, you know, my husband Jonathan is going to Transylvania for business and, you know, I hope someday I can go with him. And I hope he has a good journey. And that's what Stoker says. Hamill takes that one thread and she really allows it to live as a conversation. She has a whole scene between those two women in which they talk about what agency they do have and how to navigate within the system. And they sort of both take different paths there. But Mina has a whole conversation where she's like, my best chance at agency is to try to see the world with my husband. And then ultimately the wonderful thing about Mina is that, you know, she's pregnant the whole time on stage. So you've actually got this sort of visible cue around a femme body carrying new life. And that she, in this state that can so easily, even in our culture today, be sidelined, you know, dismissed, invisible. You know, I think women can easily still lose work opportunities if they're, you know, when people make assumptions about them and they're visibly pregnant, that Mina herself is the one to, you know, stab that stake in Dracula's heart at the end.
Spoiler alert. Is this going to be super sexy? Is this place super duper duper sexy?
Yes!
Well, what else can audiences expect besides super duper sexiness?
I definitely think the way Hamill's written it, and I think the way that it lives in our sort of zeitgeist and cultural imagination, is that there is a magnetism and a seduction element of Dracula himself. And I think that definitely lives in this play. I think that there is sort of this idea of like biting a neck. And then it's in the Stoker and it's in every vampire version you've ever seen, where like the vampire himself will also like cut himself so that other people can feed on him. And then like that there's a sort of moan inside that like that is deeply pleasurable for blood to be sucked from his butt. Like it is wild. It's wild. Now, I guess what I would say is like, I feel like it wants to be a world that is steaming with this sort of with seduction, with like physical and spiritual hunger. Definitely, I think there's going to be like kick-ass fight choreography. There is gore in this play. But what I'll say is I think Hamill's done a good job, and we will honor this. It's actually not gratuitous. I'm never interested. I mean, this will be one of the few plays I've done with a significant amount of violence. I really am, I'm like fairly uninterested in violence on stage. When it feels like it's reifying tropes of violence that become sort of normalized on stage in ways that I think are problematic.
Yeah.
So that said, in this production, I think it will be what the moments of violence are very, very efficient. And we're there together. We got to slay that vampire. You know, like we got to get in there, because those vampire wives who've also been dead for 100 years and are coming at your neck, we gotta get them. So I think that there is a playfulness to that. But Hamill does, she's very specific in when you see blood as well. And I think that'll be a fun journey of figuring that out.
Big thanks to this week's guest, Marissa Wolf, and thank you for joining me. I hope you'll join me again next week. Until then, goodbye.